You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Brand new week here on the Locked On Syracuse podcast. Welcome on in. It's Tyler Rocky and Tim Leonard. Today's episode brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts you will ever need. rockauto.com. Tim and I took a couple days off last week, some scheduling conflicts between the two of us, so we are back now kind of recapping everything that's gone on over these past couple of days. If you're not subscribed to the show yet, don't know what you're waiting for, hit us up at @LO_Syracuse on Twitter and hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to drop a review, rate, subscribe, all that good stuff to the show. Tim, we're going to be back all 5 days this week because we've got a jam-packed week of stuff that we're going to get into. We've got some football stuff today with the news of Willie Tyler decommitting. Also, college football playoff expansion is another hot topic that we'll dive into a little bit today. And then we're going to continue with our Newbies on Campus segment that we've been doing. You caught a lot of it last week. Cole Swider, Benny Williams, we did all that. This week, we're going to get into Jimmy Boeheim, Samir Torrence, and probably some other stuff will pop up along the way. But starting here with football and with Willie Tyler, kind of out of nowhere, this came. Yeah. It came over the weekend that he is decommitting from the program. So he was a guy transferred from Texas and no longer going to be with this Orange team. He was expected to compete for a starting job once summer camp opened up, but not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah, you know, this one, sort of a surprise. I don't really know what to make of it, right? Because we never even got a chance to hear anything about how he was progressing, how he was playing. And he was already kind of an unknown coming from Texas, given his track record there was pretty limited in terms of experience at Texas. But you're always excited about a guy from Texas, given just that he committed to Texas in the first place and he has to have some talent. I don't really feel too much, though, one way or the other on this one, because we never really got to know the guy. I mean, it's even a shorter tenure at Syracuse than Geno Thorpe, which is kind of hard to do. That's saying something.
And Ryan Alexander.
Yeah.
So you look at the whole Texas thing, and it's interesting when this gets brought up because, sure, he transferred from Texas, but he never played a snap there. He was there for two seasons, but one of them he sat out completely. He opted out of this past season during the pandemic. And then the year before that, he did not play a snap. And then he was at a junior college before arriving down in Austin. But I don't look at this the same way as I would have looked at, say, Chris Bleich deciding to transfer. Because Chris Bleich actually played at Florida. And Willie Tyler is a much bigger unknown. And the fact that Chris Bleich last year would have probably started on a team that was very depleted at offensive line, I just envision this as being a completely different scenario. And if you're a Syracuse fan and you are going to get shocking news on the offensive line and it's going to be one of your big ticket transfers, either Chris Bleich or Willie Tyler to decommit, I think Orange fans got the best case scenario here.
No doubt. I would agree with that totally. I think it's an odd situation because he transferred to Syracuse, you'd imagine, given that he wanted to play somewhere and he wanted to make an impact right away. And he said as much when he was quoted and interviewed as to why he picked Syracuse in the first place and why he committed. So you wonder maybe if he's decommitting because they feel like they're in a pretty good spot offensive line-wise and they had rediscussed things with him, or if that popped into it. You can go down a long road of why this happened. No one seems to really know at the moment, but I do feel like Syracuse has options at offensive line, more so than they've had in the past year. Now, it's still fairly unproven guys, and I'm still in the form of, until we see it, I'm not going to be too bullish on the offensive line, given what we've seen from them in the past couple years, but it's a different year, a different offseason to lose a guy like this, and I think Syracuse could be okay, and we'll get into more of what they have now in the offensive line group. It does hurt the depth a little bit, and I think that's the big thing. You just want options. You want depth. You can never have too much after having to play Chris Elmore at left guard last year. And I know
last year pretty much established that you can never have enough depth on the offensive line, never have enough developed guys. Because, listen, if one guy last year went down with a serious injury on top of the pre-existing ones and the guys that were already ineligible, you would have been in a boatload of trouble and probably would not have even played the season.
Yeah, and Dino had some really telling quotes coming out of spring camp. You know, we didn't get to glean too much from it because there wasn't a spring game and stuff. But when he did speak to the media, he said stuff like, we started the offseason with 10 or 12 guys and we finished it with 10. Like, we're healthy for once. And that's so big because it's a luxury they have not had in a while. So, yeah, you lose out on Willie Tyler, who was a high pedigree kid once upon a time that committed to Texas and probably had some upside. But who knows if he even was going to play. And honestly, if he's decommitting, it makes me think that he probably realized there wasn't a great path for him to find the field in his first year at Syracuse. And I think they'll still be fine. I would have liked to have had the guy on the roster just from a depth perspective and the talent that he brings and the potential that he brings maybe down the road, because I think he had 3 years of eligibility remaining. But still, it's not a costly loss. We've talked a lot about how offensive line is going to determine this season, so it could sound like this is going to be pretty detrimental, but I feel like he maybe didn't even figure into the starting line anyway.
That's what I was thinking, and I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a number of reasons why he could have decommitted. There could be something going on in his personal life. Maybe he needs to get closer to home, something along those lines. But if it is from a football standpoint, and it is a question of how much playing time he's going to get, the fact that he, at least from an outsider's perspective, a highly sought-after guy in the transfer market, a guy who ended up committing to Texas out of JUCO, like, all those are good things. And if a guy like that might not be getting slotted into the offensive line rotation, that might be a good thing for Syracuse, at least from what the starters might look like and how good these guys have developed over the offseason and what Mike Schmidt has done in his short little stint as the new offensive line coach at Syracuse in getting these guys ready to take a big step this year, because they need it. They need a huge step up on the offensive line. And maybe Willie Tyler wasn't going to get that playing time that he had envisioned when he came to Syracuse. And if that's the case, I think this actually might be a good thing from not from a losing a guy perspective, but from, hey, this guy is pretty good, and he may not have thought he could have gotten the playing time to crack this rotation. So everyone else is actually that much better.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the roster in front of me now, there's still a lot of guys there, and Jacob Bradford is one of them, who's another transfer coming in, and by all accounts, he's going to be ready to make an impact this year, it seems like. So they have versatile guys as well. Aaron Service is someone we've talked a lot about. That's going to be one of the most intriguing things when that first depth chart comes out. Where is Service lined up? Is he going to begin some work at center? Do they shift him back to there? Do they keep him at the tackle spot? The nice thing is they have versatile guys and they have more healthy guys than they've had in a while when you factor in Chris Bleich also having that waiver pass this year and everything. So offensive line, it's been the key to the season for a while. I remember being at the ACC media event down in Charlotte right before the kind of disappointing first year after the 10-3 season in the first year with Tommy DeVito as the full-time starter. And Dino point blank said, offensive line is the key to our season. And it turned out it was, and it was a negative key, and it really hurt them that year. Then it comes back that, like, we're going to be saying that for a while. Offensive line is the key to a lot of team season. It's really hurt Syracuse, especially given the type of quarterback they've had under center for a while. And Tommy DeVito, who when he's protected has been pretty good. When he's been hurried or forced to rush in the pocket, he's been pretty dang bad. So we need the offensive line to be better this year. Willie Tyler could have helped, but losing him, I don't think hurts things too much, because my projected depth chart did not have him as a starter week one. So if you're listening to this podcast and thinking, oh, this is bad news, we had a kid from Texas, I was all excited about him, I hear you, but I don't think it's the end of the world.
Quick time out to tell you about the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. It is betonline.ag. With baseball season in full swing, you got to do what I do and track all the action at BetOnline. You'll get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB and the NBA and NHL playoffs, as well as some UFC and MMA odds as well. So before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline.ag online on your phone or laptop and check out all of the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Use our promo code LOCKEDON and you will get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's right, 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code Locked On. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. So looking at the offensive line as a whole here, Mike Schmidt's really got his work cut out for him. He does bring back a lot of starters from a season ago. However, those starters also were not the greatest players. I mean, you look at it, if you take the PFF numbers, the Pro Football Focus stats, they ranked 106th in pass blocking and 119th in run blocking, all of that out of 129 teams in the entire country. So you look at that, and you're not working with a ton here. There's obviously a lot to be desired, but sometimes we see continuity matters. Like, I look at that season, the first one after the first full season with Tommy DeVito at quarterback, and the offensive line got better at the end of the season, especially from a pass blocking standpoint, and it's because there was continuity that they were finally playing with. And I think stuff like that's going to be critical. And Mike Schmidt's a guy who knows how to turn around offensive lines. We saw it at San Diego State, where they were one of the better offensive lines year after year. And you can say, oh, well, it's San Diego State, but you're still going up against some Pac-12 teams here and there. And I mean, the Mountain West is still a solid football conference as well. And he was churning out NFL draft picks. You look at the last six NFL drafts, he had put three offensive linemen in the NFL. So his guidance is going to be a very critical part of how this offensive line is going to operate this upcoming season.
Yeah, I think the only question mark I have now about the offensive line is if one of those tackles gets hurt. And when I say the tackles, I mean what most, I'd say, are projecting to be the starting tackles, which is the starting tackles from last year, Matthew Bergeron, Aaron Service. Not that they have too much of a checkered history of getting injured. I mean, Service, I think we'd all agree, was probably playing through injury through a good chunk of last year when he really did struggle statistically and kind of actually digressed for the most part in terms of how productive he was at the tackle position. But that'd be my concern now, is if one of those guys gets hurt, who do you turn to? Because from there, it's young guys. I mean, there's an Enrique Cruz on the roster who we're all very excited about, but offensive line especially is a position that you don't want to throw out a freshman. They've got to come in. They've got to get through the strength and training protocol a little bit. Garth Barkley, someone who's now entering his second year and by all accounts has put on some weight, but it gets kind of younger quicker there than it used to with Willie Tyler as an option in that area. So that's my concern. I mean, there's still one or two injuries could really hurt them at that position, but it's not as bad as it has been.
No doubt. And I look at it this way. You brought up Service. I think that's an important name to know because I liken it to that 2018 team that went 10-3. And Cody Conway, such an anchor on that line. He was so good for that team on a pretty good offensive line, and he was that vet, the elder statesman, the guy who kind of knew the ins and outs of everything. And Aaron Service should be that guy this year. Now, hopefully, he looks a lot healthier than he did last season, because last year he was the worst of the starting offensive linemen, and even of the non-starting offensive linemen, of all the linemen, he may have been the worst, but he was still going out there and trying to give everything that he could, because if he went down, I mean, Dino has said it, if there was a lineman or two that went down, or if Elmore doesn't volunteer to go play on the offensive line, they may not have played last year. And they need Aaron Service to be healthy, because when he is healthy, he can be a significant contributor on this offensive line.
Yeah, and I think Jacob Bradford is one of those guys now that has more of a path to playing time, as I brought up earlier. The other thing is, they have a new coach in there, as you mentioned, Mike Schmidt, a guy that has had some experience of turning the ship around a little bit offensive line-wise. That gives me some optimism about this year's group as well. And look, that's all you can do after you come off a season where you basically only won one game, or you only won one game, and it was a really, really rough year against a pretty tough ACC schedule, and you're looking ahead to next year. You're looking for optimism. I get it. Like, this is a Syracuse podcast. We're looking for it, but it is nice to know that they made a change at the coaching staff at the offensive line position, and he's bringing in some newfound invigoration, maybe some just newfound optimism to that group, and maybe they need a little bit of a boost. So that gets me even more optimistic. And the reason why I do feel like Syracuse will exceed expectations for the most part, and when we talked about the Vegas over-unders that are out there on betonline.ag and stuff like that, it's lower than we thought, and the reason why I think they will exceed expectations is because I think this offensive line can just be healthier and better and deeper than they've been in a while, and that was so much to me of what made them really struggle the past couple years.
And I'm looking at it from this lens too. Dakota Davis, when you look at the PFF numbers on him, he was actually one of the better guys right. that they had in both pass and run blocking. He's going to be healthier this year. He only played, I believe, in five or maybe four games last season. So if you get a full season of him, and he might be your best blocking offensive lineman, that's going to certainly help this group. Not to mention you're adding Chris Bleich, who started some games at Florida before, and you're just bringing in Matthew Bergeron as a guy who has gotten better and better year after year, game after game. You're going to have some guys that are better. I know the offensive line struggled, and the struggle is being generous. I mean, the offensive line has sucked the last 2 years on this team. Right. Like, just to be blunt, it has sucked. And if you're getting guys that are taking strides, like I think Bergeron is and will continue to do, getting healthy with Davis, getting good, talented, fresh faces in like Bleich, and then you also have some veteran guys that are hopefully healthy for you, like Aaron Service and Darius Tisdale, another name. If those guys are good to go, healthy, and can continue to bring that experience is going to help this team. And you hear a lot of it that this offensive line was actually doing a pretty good job from the spring camp against a group of pretty much fifth and sixth year defensive yeah. linemen. And I think that's a really good sign and a really good indicator that, listen, I'm not saying they're going to be the best offensive line in the ACC. I'm not even saying they're going to be top five or even top half. But if this offensive line is like eighth.
Just adequate, man.
In the eighth,
that's
just
all
be
I'm looking
average.
For. Yeah.
Being average, this team can at least win five games off of that, maybe.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I do think this decision in finding out about Willie Tyler decommitting probably increases the chances of Aaron Service just staying at the tackle spot. It's harder for me to see a starting group where Service is moved back to center, Vettorello is put as maybe a versatile backup, because a lot of people were envisioning, okay, maybe if Willie Tyler's good, we knew he was probably in the competition for the starting job at least, then he could slide to a tackle spot and can move Service back to center where he was a little bit more successful before last year. And I was one of the people that was subscribing to that plan a little bit just from a surface level, but maybe after the spring camp, like we said, they discussed this with Willie Tyler and they said Aaron's playing a lot better at the tackle spot and we might not have a path for you to start this year. I don't know what happened here. Like you said, there's a number of things that could have happened, so I don't really want to even speculate, but it's not a total negative, in my opinion. I mean, it's not good, but it's not a total disaster that Willie Tyler is moving on. It probably means that Aaron Service is going to be a starting tackle next year, though.
And another thing, timing-wise, I'd rather this happen now
yeah,
than happen
point.
In October.
Right.
Like we have seen happen in the past. It is, you're going to have, you're going to go into your summer camp with a plan, you're going to know who's there, and you're not going to get caught with any surprises. And I think that's another good thing that is going to come out of this from it happening now, as opposed to in the summer or even worse, in the season.
Right. No, I think it's good timing for sure. It's not a disaster. And overall, I went from maybe feeling like a 6 out of 10 on the offensive line to like a 5.5 out of 10. Like, I still am pretty optimistic. It doesn't change my opinion too much.
Hey, did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, including their limited time offers as well? When you talk to a Built Bar fan, they're definitely passionate about what their favorites are. Just ask Tim and I. My favorite is the peanut butter brownie, but they've got a variety of other flavors as well, whether it's coconut, some fruit flavors, some other chocolate flavors, the salted caramel. There's a Built Bar for everybody. And if you haven't tried all the flavors yet, you can get a mix box as well, where you will get two of each of the 9 flavors. And not only do Built Bars taste great, but they're also healthy for you too. Most of the flavors have 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 net carbs. So order today and get that raspberry, the mint brownie, or do what I do, get the peanut butter brownie, or get whatever you like. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your first order. Again, BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your first order. So the other big news that came out from over this past week, and the College Football Playoff Committee is looking at expanding to 12 teams, and that perked up the ears of a number of Orange fans, because let's be honest, I don't know if during our lifetimes we would ever see a Syracuse team end up in the top 4 of a college football playoff. That is some pretty lofty stuff, and really it's not just a Syracuse thing, it is an across the entire country thing, because we see it year after year. You know you're probably getting Alabama or Clemson, then probably another SEC school, but after that, it's pretty tough to get into that top 4. Now, our buddy at Baptized by Fire 7, Dominic, on Twitter says, "Do you see Syracuse having a top 12 season anytime soon? Remember, no one saw Eric Dungy going," he says 11-2, but it was 10-3 his senior season.
Still, though,
so,
yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, still. And I look at it and I say to myself, even with an expanded 12-team format, and I get why they're doing it, financials, all that stuff, and I'm not opposed to it. I've always actually, a lot of people wanted 8. My first inclination when I wanted an initial college football expansion, which I think after everyone saw it the first year and loved it the first year,
yeah,
everyone wanted it to expand to 8 then. I was actually always calling for 12. Because
me too,
I thought,
dude. I don't know why people are so against this. I feel like it's gotten a lot of pushback, and I don't know, just from an entertainment perspective, give me more games, give me more marquee games. Yes, some of them are going to be blowouts, and that's inevitable, but
even
it's
in the four-team format, like I've got the every single college football playoff game ever played, all right? Pretty much every year, at least 2 of the 3 are blowouts. At least 2 of the 3. So my mantra is always this, all right? More football, more better. Because
same.
I love watching football. And I wish Syracuse was a better football playing school than it is right now. But I'm going to watch the sport no matter what because I love watching football. So I crunched some of the numbers here, okay? Syracuse as a program. And of course, these are the AP ranks for the most part because of the fact that the college football playoff is so new and has only had 7 iterations thus far. But Syracuse has been playing football for 120 years. Can you believe that, Tim?
Wow.
120 years, all right? I want you to guess right now, all right, how many of those 120 years has Syracuse ended as a top 12 team?
Man, I have no idea. I feel like it's got to be higher than you think because of those glory years, 50s, 60s. I mean, they've had so many good years and good stretches. I don't know, 30, 35 or something like that?
The correct answer would be 6.
Wow.
6 times out of, and this is all according to the sports reference page, but I've got it at 6 times that Syracuse has ended in the top 12.
In their history?
In fact,
man.
You ready for this? This might be an even worse number to hear right here, but they have ended the season ranked in just 16 of the 120 seasons that they have played. 16 of the 120.
And what, now, I mean, outside of the 2018, I guess it was, year, and they finished that year ranked, right? I mean, they had to after the camp,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They
so
did. Mm-hmm. That
outside
is one
of that,
16.
You have to go back to McNabb, probably, to be a ranked team that finished the year.
I believe it was 01 was the last time before that. And then in season, at any point in the season where Syracuse has been ranked at somewhere in the top 12, how many times has their best point in the season been in the top 12 out of the 120 seasons?
Well, I mean, I was way off on the first one. I would guess that has to be at least in the 20s, right?
Just shy of it. 19 times it has been Syracuse has finished.
Still lower than I would have guessed, honestly.
Syracuse has appeared at any point in the season in the top 12. So that just kind of goes to show you how far off this program is from really getting into that college football playoff conversation. Now, you do
have to argue those numbers are even inflated from really, I mean, because that's a lot of history and that's a lot of when they were actually good, that's where they got ranked, you know?
Right, exactly. And I look at it from this way, okay? Yes, you're going to have your flare-ups, and it's cool to be in the conversation. I mean, 2018, it got to the point where you were starting to pull out your pocket schedule and say, okay, well, if they beat Notre Dame and
especially if there was 12 that year, then definitely that would have been a talking point.
12 that year, you are in the conversation. Pretty much after the UNC win, you worked your way into the conversation with every game after that. But I mean, you think about it, even with a four team, I mean, some Syracuse fans, the hyper optimists, were thinking to themselves, okay, well, if you beat Notre Dame and then you take care of business after that, you might have a chance to crack that top four, because Notre Dame was one of those highly rated teams. And if I remember correctly, I believe they went to the college football playoff that year and just got thumped by Clemson.
That's every year for Notre Dame.
But that's every year, right. So, I mean, I threw that out there, and I've got like a 50% chance of being right.
Sure.
But that, to me, makes it interesting, because the 12, okay, you might come close, and it's fun in the moment, but the state of the program is this, is that you're not going to come close to the top 12 most seasons. Just the way that the program has been trending. Now, maybe Dino Babers can fix that, but he's got one little gold star on the resume right now.
Yeah.
Everything else has been pretty, pretty bad when you look at it from a record standpoint, appearing in the rankings, all that stuff. And I don't know, maybe Syracuse got a taste of success a little too early, and or the timing of it wasn't necessarily right with a quarterback that was going to be on his way out. But it's tough to, as a Syracuse fan and someone who follows the team, like, I look at the expansion, and yes, it's good for Syracuse. No doubt it is good for Syracuse and pretty much every other school
that isn't successful.
Right. Increasing the number of chances to get into the playoff is obviously big. But at the same time, I'm not going to be knocking on the doors and saying, hey, this team could go to the playoff year in and year out because there's 12 now. Because at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to change a whole heck of a lot. I don't expect to see Syracuse contend for a college football playoff spot in the near future.
No, I mean, they wouldn't have been in the playoff if there were 60 teams the past couple years, you know? Like, it's
right.
They've been very far off the past couple years. Now, it's hard to say it's impossible or to ever see them in that format or to see it in our lifetime, because we, like Dominic said in his original tweet, no one saw it coming when they were in the conversation and would have been firmly in the conversation, especially going into that Notre Dame game. I wish we could have time traveled and had the 12 team playoff then, because then that Notre Dame game is massive. And granted, they laid an egg in it, so it would have been even more disappointing probably after Dungy got hurt. But still, it's hard to say it's impossible because they're not that far off from doing it, but it's in a weird state, the program, because, you know, you compare it to like other schools and maybe even to make like a basketball comparison, Wake Forest, BC, those are the schools that have been near the bottom of the pack basketball-wise in the ACC. Those schools haven't had that one flash in the pan year that Syracuse has had. They haven't even come close to that. So it's not like they're in a dire state to the point where it's just not possible for them to get there, because they do have some history. They have some tradition. They've had some good players. I mean, they had three guys drafted in the NFL, or two, excuse me, and then Trill was an undrafted guy along with Cooney this year. So they had a lot of talent on the roster. It's just injuries and a couple other things these past years have derailed their seasons. Now you've got some new guys on the staff, and I still believe in Dino. I think it's hard to really make a case right now that he doesn't finish his career getting fired versus kind of going out on his own terms. It's hard to make that case given where they're at right now, but he's done it before. He could do it again. And I think the 12-team playoff is just better for basically everyone in college football, including Syracuse.
And especially the fans. Listen, if you love football, this is going to be awesome for you. Now, this does bring up another big question that I think impacts Syracuse a fair amount here, and it is the Notre Dame wrinkle to all of this.
Yes.
Because as we know, Notre Dame is a football independent. They were in the ACC for this previous season because there's obviously ACC ties in other sports with the Fighting Irish. But one of the big things that comes into play here is the fact that the four teams, because remember, 12. You can't build a perfect bracket with 12, an even bracket, okay? There have to be byes doled out, and the four byes would go to power conference teams. Notre Dame would not fit underneath that umbrella. So now, does Notre Dame potentially join the ACC? Because it would get into the, it would have a chance at getting a bye in that way. So I think that from a Notre Dame standpoint, I don't know if you do. I don't think it makes a huge difference for you because, okay, sure, it's the one extra game you have to play, but let's be honest, 12-team format, year after year, you're probably getting in more times than not.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's worth it. They should join. Now, do I want them to join the ACC? That's a complex question because I'm not on the entire side of some of the fans that are like, oh, just kick Notre Dame out. We don't want any part of them. I think there's some value in them being in the conference, and you play them a decent amount anyway, so I don't really care that much. But if I'm Notre Dame, I would definitely join the conference. I hear what you're saying. It's also like, why would you create an even more difficult path than everyone else when you are a program that aspires to be there consistently, has those expectations, has those goals for your head coach and your football program, and you haven't really been getting it done as much lately, so you're going to just not take a way to make it easier on yourself. I think you have to join the ACC if you're Notre Dame now. Maybe not next year. I don't know when it... I mean, they still got some time before this format comes in, but I think the chances of Notre Dame joining the ACC went up a lot.
They definitely increased, but you cannot turn aside the fact that you would be foregoing a good amount of money from your TV contract that you now all of a sudden would have to split. And as we enter the name, image, likeness era, I'm wondering if that is going to be a bigger draw with NBC. I'm not the marketing genius here. I don't know where the tie-in is, but having a national broadcast contract with NBC, I think helps Notre Dame when you are an exclusive to a major network like that. I think that could be another thing that gets taken into account there from a football standpoint. I don't know what the end result is going to be, but honestly, if I'm Notre Dame, I look at these last, look at the last four seasons, all right? Based on their finish, they would have been a college football playoff team each of the last four seasons. And
last year they would have been playing Coastal Carolina, I think I saw. Like, they would have taken care of business probably in that game.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you're probably going to be one of those higher seeded teams of the teams that don't get the bye. So sure, there's going to be the year where you play a damn good Georgia team because Alabama won the SEC and got the automatic bid or the automatic bye. But there's also going to be years where, like you said, you're going to get that group of five team that flashes up, the UCF or the Coastal Carolina or the BYU, who hasn't played anyone all year, and then all of a sudden they go up against Notre Dame, one of the elites in college football history, and even in the present too, and you're just going to get whooped in that game. You're going to see a fair amount of blowouts in these early games, so sure, you have to play the game, and of course that always puts you at risk for injury and whatnot. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's a big deal. I think Notre Dame is better off doing what they're doing right now. And listen, I am someone who loathes the fact that Notre Dame claims itself as independent. But I'm looking at it from their standpoint, and I don't see why they would bow out of their current situation. Because it's as cushy as can be, in my opinion. And with 12 teams, I think it actually makes more sense for them not to join a conference.
Right. I mean, I hear you on the TV contract part. It's going to be fascinating to see if this goes through and then what that means for Notre Dame and how they handle it. It would be really tough, though, if they were the number one seed one year and then they're relegated to playing a game as the five seed. I mean, that's really, like, to have that happen, one year, it feels like you just have to take the TV money at that point and take the hit to the TV money, I should say.
Right. Well, we'll continue to monitor it. I'm looking forward to see how all this stuff plays out. All right, tomorrow on the show, we're going to get back to our Newbies on Campus series. We're going to dive into the coach's kid, Jimmy Boeheim, coming over from Cornell. We'll get into his strengths, weaknesses, all that stuff, what we think his role might be, and some stat projections for him as well. He's only going to have 1 year at Syracuse, so Tim and I will get into all of that on tomorrow's show. Thanks for listening. Be sure to hit that subscribe button, throw us a follow on Twitter, and we will talk to you guys tomorrow.